Welcome to Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, a potpourri of literary snacks for the mind and interviews. You may have noticed I'm not Sandy Harper or Dick Reichman. I'm Steve Heimel, and even though I usually do news kind of things, we'll try and stick to the arts today and talk about socialism in early Alaska. What's that got to do with the arts? Stay tuned. Today is the first in a special series celebrating the history of Alaska with five world premieres of new plays, especially written by Alaska playwrights on Alaskan themes. These plays have been made possible through a grant from the Alaska Humanities Forum and will be presented at Cyrano's Off-Center Playhouse throughout 2009. And the first one is coming up on March 13th. We have the director and the playwright. Let's start with the playwright, Arlisa Jones, known as a poet in Anchorage, I guess, for what, about 10, 12 years?
Yeah, probably about 12 years.
And you sort of like the performance side of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, not the performance side. I like writing for the performance side. I do not want to ever imagine myself on stage saying my words.
So this production is entitled Make Good the Fires.
Correct, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what this, I mean, I mentioned socialism in Alaska history, but that's pretty well all I've said. You're the one that has to put a real person in all this and human emotions in this, what can be a rather dry background of Alaska history.
Right. Yeah, you get approached to write a history play and you think, oh, how am I going to do that? You know, it just doesn't sound very interesting. And then when the other words swarming around it are socialism and Karl Marx.
Yeah.
That's a death knell for theater. But Sandy approached me in June to write the play, and she said, I've got this idea for a play and the whole statehood theme and about Lena Morrow Lewis. And I said, oh, yeah, sure, okay, you know, I'll think about it. And I was just sort of thinking about it, and I wasn't excited about the idea until I started looking at who this woman was, Lena Morrow Lewis, who came to Alaska in 1912. And the more I began to find out about the person, or what I began to imagine about the person, the play for me became about her, not about the history around her. That's just sort of the setting of this play for me.
Mystery. Yeah. That's Boston Christopher's telephone going off.
Sitting right next to me.
Welcome to the program, Boston.
Thank you. Sorry.
We didn't do the usual cell phone cautionary note there, and we got bit by it right away. Well, before we introduce you further, let's let Arlisa continue on the issue of this fascinating woman whose profile, I guess, Sarah Wagner is going to bring to the stage.
Yeah, Sarah Wagner. We're so lucky to have her as our actress. Lena, as I started to read about her, she really became, I don't know, she came to life for me. And you know, what I see in my head is this very independent, powerful, very well-spoken woman. And it's very interesting now that Sarah is up here and she's reading my lines, but it's become so much more than my lines. She's really embodying the Lena that I see in my head. And that's, it kind of sends chills down my spine. Sometimes she'll even, like, clear her throat at the same place that I imagine Lena clearing her throat, or her voice will crack or something. And then there's other moments where Sarah will, she sort of enlarges what I, or enlarges, that's a, that
that's
word?
Okay. Make it up.
We've been inventing words in this production, too. Maybe Boston will use some of his. But she's making this character so much more than what I saw. And so that, to me, is... that's the exciting part of why I want to write for performance.
Oh, great, Boston. That's a great opening for you, because that is the magic of theater.
Absolutely. Well, the first thing that I think we need to say is that, and as Arlisa sort of articulated, was this is not a play about socialism. This is not a play about Alaska. This is a play about a woman and her journey through life. Mm-hmm. And it happens to be that she is fighting for the cause of socialism and women's suffrage.
Very passionately.
And so it's sort of, but it's really her journey. And in theater, I think that's what we want to see. We go to theater to watch live human beings interacting with other live human beings and watch this journey. And we almost want to breathe with them, you know, in that sense, in terms of bringing the history to life. And so there's a real structural kind of boundary that we've given ourselves in terms of how the play is structured, and then within that, this sort of freedom to play around with time and space, and so that we can see this woman's history and her life come, and also see the challenges that she faced, and see some of the barriers that she encountered along the way, and how she handled those. Mm-hmm. And what I think to me is the most interesting on stage is watching someone's not really struggle, but watching their kind of them deal with the way that they're going through their life and the questions that they have for themselves and the inner journey that they're on. I think we all in our lives have kind of something we're searching for. And something that can help us find our identity, and we continue to do that, and that's what I think we go to the theater to see is that kind of passion and humanity.
Well, you know the dramaturg you've been working with, Jane Wenger.
Yeah, Jane Wenger. Yeah,
Wenger. Sorry.
Yeah.
Has some really nice observations about the play. I imagine she's been very helpful.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I think it would be helpful to mention just the process of how this play started. I know Arlisha mentioned that a little bit, that Sandy had wanted to do this Alaska Statehood. This is the 50th year of Alaska Statehood.
This is Sandy
Statehood
at Cyrano's Theater.
Yeah, Sandy Harper. Mm-hmm. And she approached Arlisha and commissioned the play. And then the last Valdez Theater Conference, we were all attending it, and I had said to Sandy, hey, I'd love to come back home, because I've been gone for about 10 years. I said, I'd love to come up and direct. And she said, oh, well, I'm doing these plays. And she mentioned who the playwrights were, and Arlisha's name was there. And I've always loved Arlisha's work and wanted to work with her. And then Jane, who's been coming to Valdez the last 3 or 4 years as someone to help develop new playwrights down there, jumped on board as the dramaturg. And so they had a process of a few months from basically last summer through the fall. And then we all started to get together on the phone. We did three ways. We did Skype. We did all this new technology stuff that, I mean, our first read through, Jane was in San Francisco. I was in Los Angeles. And we were on Skype watching the actors read the play at Arlisha's home here in Alaska.
Oh, my God.
So it was fantastic. And then we actually got together in San Francisco in early January, about a month or so before rehearsals began, and we had a retreat at Jane's house for 3 days, where we had Sarah, who now lives in Los Angeles as well, had come up with me to San Francisco, and we workshopped the play for a weekend. We grabbed some other actors from San Francisco that I knew, actually someone who used to be up here, Peter Rocco, and we workshopped the play for 3 days, and it was a fantastic experience.
Just for me, that was the first time I've ever been able to workshop and really work with actors while I'm in the active process of making the play. Usually I'm off in my chair in the corner, up at 2 a.m. writing.
Yeah, workshop. You could jump right in there and make a pest of yourself.
Well, it was wonderful because they would read a line and let's try it this way. In Boston, we kind of get up and move them around. And so really what I had in front of me was a living document that wasn't set in stone. And so to be able to approach a play from that angle was all new to me. And it's changed my writing completely.
Well, Jane's observation is that this play is essentially about why somebody doesn't give up. Mm-hmm. Even though they come to the end of her life, she's penniless. Mm-hmm. She's going to die penniless. She's looking back over her life, and she is having regrets. But at the same time, the lesson that I understand her that she found in it was, you don't give up.
Right.
It's worth it. Mm-hmm. And, what a time to tell such a story.
Right. Well, and that's what I think is so amazing about this play is that we're kind of, in a sense, pulling this woman that not a lot of people know about, even nationally. This woman, Lena Mora Lewis, was a national speaker. Mm-hmm. She was the secretary to the National Executive Council of the Socialist Party.
She was a communist agitator. I mean, when I was growing up in the 50s, these kind of people were never talked
about. Let's say this. First of all, communism did not come into play with socialists until later.
Oh, I know. Right. I'm just saying what J. Edgar Hoover was telling all of us back then.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's what's interesting about this is that my generation, which I'm, I guess, considered a Gen Xer, as it were, I'm getting on the older side of that.
I'm just a little bit older than you, so I'm not.
But we weren't. We were taught that socialist was communist, mm-hmm. and socialism was bad. And then you learn what's been so fun and valuable in working on a play and is seeing things like and hearing things like, well, you know, the 8-hour workday becomes is there because of the Socialist Party.
Mm-hmm. And then realizing you know, all these people right. were exterminated for no good reason in Chicago mm-hmm. because of the Haymarket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because of what they called the Haymarket Riot, which was a police riot. And they went out and dug these people up
right.
and had these big show trials yeah. and executed
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Alina Morrow was, I mean, she was a very active figure in the early part of the 1900s.
Well, I want to add here, too, yeah. that part of our collaborative team here, we got to work with Bev Beaton, who's a historian here in Anchorage. And it's been really valuable just to talk to her and to, because I don't know anything about socialism. I don't know anything about Marxism. So Bev, what does this mean? And she came and she spoke to our cast and crew. I think our first week or second week of, yeah. of rehearsals. And the point she made was it's hard for all of us to imagine, but we had a viable third party back then. We had a socialist party. People were card-carrying members.
Yeah, that's right.
Debs was actually getting votes for presidency. And so that's really hard for us to imagine.
Yeah.
And it's not something that we really get taught in
we hear
America.
About Judge Wickersham, but they mm-hmm. sort of slide over the way that he kept losing elections and his ties to the plutocrats at the
mm-hmm.
time.
Right.
You know, they're pretty well glossed over for mm-hmm. the most part. Mm-hmm. It's only really coming out now just mm-hmm. how incestuous that whole business was with those magnates. And, mm-hmm. you know, they had a muckraking press, but it was a muckraking press, you know.
Absolutely.
She
mm-hmm.
was part of it, as mm-hmm. a matter of fact.
She started 4 newspapers, I think, while she was here. So I'm sure she had her muckrake out.
Yeah, yeah. There was a little bit of that going on. And yeah. she was here for a number of years. She was here for about 5 years, and she ran for territorial delegate against Wickersham and lost, of course. She only got about – this is an interesting thing. She only got about 10% of the vote, but some of their issues that were on the ballot mm-hmm. actually got more like 80% of the vote. So wow. it was kind of like the issues of the day were important to people, but they were mm-hmm. still fighting against some of the personalities, I suppose, as you would want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very interesting sort of – it's sort of like we're pulling this – and what you were saying, what I was connecting to was that we're pulling this woman from our past and these issues from our past and some of these things that we're struggling against. And like Jane says, everyone is sort of – how much are you willing to give to your cause? And how much are you willing to come mm-hmm. together? And in a sense, it's like when you look at our new world now, in a sense, we're still struggling with our economy, but we have a new president. And one of the things that always struck me about Obama was that when he says, it's not going to be me that's going to change everything. You have to step forward as well. Mm-hmm. We all are in this together. You know, we are all part of making our world better. We can't rely on one person or one party or one anything. And I always consider myself nonpartisan, so I don't actually subscribe to one party or another because I think it's a very valuable statement that we all are part of coming together to make the world a better place. And well, I think that's part of what she was fighting for back then.
Mm-hmm. Well, believe it or not, this is a program not about politics, not about history, but about the arts.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
right.
and I want to switch it back to that, to the process sure. of the imagination. Or Lisa Good. Jones, you had mm-hmm. to imagine this character.
Mm-hmm.
What were your raw materials?
My raw materials, well, some of the other characters in the play, we have a three-person cast, and so two of the members are playing
multiple
14
roles.
Other characters
yeah.
or something crazy. I had 28 at one time, but they made me kill people. So,
so we got Jeff McCamish,
Krista Schwarting.
Yeah, well, I think they're equal to this.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait till you see them. But my raw material, so I started to, I used some of the real historical people that were here that she knew, her friends. And then I also made up people, and it's people that I've known in Alaska or people I wish I'd known. The legends, let's say, and then the raw materials really it's where history sort of meets imagination. And how do you fill that? Well, you go to your own life, and I put Lena out on the dog sled trails and out at fires, and just to write those scenes. It's all those times I've been out there and done that, and what it's like to be a woman in a man's world out in the wilderness. You know, it's very difficult, and it's a pain in the butt sometimes. And that just sort of fleshed her out for me and gives the actress on stage something to do, to be this woman out in the wilderness, you know, wearing this black dress and That must have been extremely difficult.
So, not to push it, but where's the art?
Where's the art? The art is, at one level, I would say the art is in the structure of the play and how I see the history. And when I was going to school, we tend to learn history in a linear fashion, and that's why everyone's, I think, bored with it. And, oh, that's history, you know, it's dates and figures. And so I had the dates and the figures, and I started to go into the language and the syntax of that at that level, that kind of that poet's level of how the letters spoke to each other and what kind of words they used. So that started to act on me. And then just that I was trying to write her life from the time, I think she's 34 to 88, and she was only in Alaska for 5 years of that period. So I knew I wasn't writing a linear play. So I started to layer things on top of each other, and scenes that happened in New York City when she's 50 speak to scenes and she's on the steamboat arriving in Alaska. So that's where the art started to come in too. Then when I started to learn about her life, everything about her struck me as, my God, that's a metaphor. You talk about the metaphors of your life. You know, I'm a butcher, so one of my metaphors is blood and meat, as that's what I write about a lot. Lena, the play is called Make Good the Fires. Fire just seemed to be this thing that sort of came into a lot of the scenes that I started to imagine about her. And one of them is when she arrived in Alaska, the day she arrived, Nova Eruptive Volcano exploded.
And
it was the largest explosion in the Northern Hemisphere. And I thought, well, it knew she was coming, you know?
So changed the climate for years.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. And they talk about, I saw pictures, there was 10 inches of ash, I think, in either Seward or Valdez, you know? Yeah. And then I just have to say, as we were getting ready to bring everyone up and start the rehearsal process, you know, readouts over there burping and doing what it's doing.
Yeah. So I'm mirroring our beginnings of our rehearsal.
Opening night.
I got these phone calls from Jane, like, I'm not coming up there if that volcano blows. And boss is like, what's going to happen? You know, which we have no control over.
Yeah, they were predicting that it was going to blow right as about we were going to fly up here and start rehearsals. And it was like, wow, well, this is going to really be sort of, you know, great for our beginning process. And actually, it would have been great to have that there and kind of include some of that in there. And I think, you know, the art also becomes about realizing these people on stage. Mm-hmm. I mean, Arlisha's worked on this play, we've gathered a great cast. Sarah Wagner's coming back to Anchorage to do Lena. Jeff McCamish, who's a great actor and is in a versatile role here, playing a number of characters. And Krista Swarting, who is just wonderful in the play as well. And we're about halfway through our rehearsal period at this point. And we've had a great time sort of exploring. We've done a lot of improvs and we've done some other things to just kind of build, you know, backstory for some of these characters in the play and really kind of capture the time period and also the behavior that took place back then as opposed to now in a little more contemporary the way we all are with each other, when back then there was a little more formality and there was a little more things didn't come out as, we weren't as brash in our speaking, maybe. And so, but there are some fun scenes where, you know, she ends up having some good times with one of the characters and there's some liquor being thrown back and it's very, thank God. Yeah, thank goodness, right? That's the thing, is there are moments of levity and humor in this play. Arlisha's writing, and actors and directors and designers, and it was so interesting to get people involved in this production because people love Arlisha's writing. And so we all are coming around because we want to be inside that. We want to be with Arlisha and her beautiful metaphors. And part of it, too, is one of the reasons I wanted to work with Arlisha and one of the reasons I wanted to work on this play was finding the ways to take the art of having a history play or having a play about Alaska or it's not really about Alaska, but, you know, and set in Alaska in some ways, and make it as active as possible so that people will sit up in their chairs and listen, as opposed to, you know, if you want a history lesson, you can get that with a chalkboard.
You know, what strikes me, Hollywood has gotten very good at this. You know, they're very good at capturing. I mean, there's masters. Coppola's a master of you know, evoking a particular time. They're in love with, like, the World War II era now. Mm-hmm. They'll move on to the noir era, or they have to some degree. But whatever era they pick, they it's not just the little details, but it's the flavor. And they have all this great technology to put you in that place.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have that. You've got her words.
Yeah. We have our actors. We do have some really fun, and I don't want to ruin some of the parts of the play for people, because it is really going to be an amazing experience. But we have some old footage from the time period that we're incorporating into certain places. And I think you're right about that. I mean, the challenge is, in 2 hours, how do you give... You can't obviously cover someone's entire life or an entire event, really. But what you're looking for is the highlights and the essence of that, to kind of say, this was the essence of this person and her challenges and her struggles and what she was fighting for and what she was learning about herself through this struggle. And now, like you were saying, as Jane was saying, looking back on that and in a sense asking that question, like, did I do the right thing? Was I fighting for the right cause?
I can't even imagine that she had that much doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
there was so much hope attached to that Debs movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but when you're penniless and alone in an apartment by yourself.
Yeah, you say, well, I guess that wasn't such a good idea after all.
And it's like, you know, it's you start to wonder. Now, she was living in a sort of a tenement housing that was, you know, sponsored or worked, controlled by the Democratic Socialist Party.
Right.
And so there was that. I mean, she was still within that. But it had completely changed over those years that she was in Alaska through to, you know, the late 40s post-war, when it had become more of the communists had kind of captured onto the word, and it kind of the idea of the red, you know, became something that
Is that when the play opens? Does the play actually open in 1948?
The play opens in 1948.
Oh.
I believe, yeah.
What a weird time that was. I was 5 years old.
Actually, it opens in 1916. Excuse me. Hey.
Oh,
we're in memory, so I don't...
It goes back... Yeah.
It goes back and forth.
But it gravitates to that, right? Because there's flashbacks.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's memories, and there's different things that happen, different people that come along in her way, and... And I think it's an interesting time, that time period, and we're covering all those different time periods. And
well, you know, you had the atomic bomb. Mm-hmm. I mean, that alone, you want a metaphor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, she actually does bring that up. She talks not the atomic bomb per se, but she does talk about Truman a little bit and the differences between, you know, her guy Debs.
You will never convince Ted Stevens that we shouldn't have dropped the bomb on Hiroshima.
Wait, Steve, I thought this wasn't a show about politics.
I'm just telling you. The point I'm making is it was a cultural trauma of such enormous proportions that it is still passing through our culture.
Yeah.
It's monstrous. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't think I'd live to be 30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was going to be nuclear annihilation.
There's another thing that's come into the culture and sort of gone out, though, because by the time I was going through school, we didn't talk about the bomb anymore.
Yeah.
And it was just a picture on TV that we saw that we thought, wow, that's a pretty cool looking bomb, you know, and now the bomb is the word that people use. And
I mean, we grew up in the Cold War.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when we grew up. And so there's all this stuff had changed. And
we're used to it by now.
Yeah. But it's a very... it's a wonderful piece of writing that Arlisha's working on, that she's come up with, and our actors are fantastic, and they're exploring these characters and realizing them and bringing them to life. And I think the flavor and essence of her time in Alaska will be well served in the play. I think people will really find it an interesting person that they may not even know existed here.
Yeah.
You know, and
well,
sort of,
that seems clear. Right?
Yeah.
You don't see the name in the history books at all.
No, you don't. Hardly ever.
Yeah.
Here she put out four newspapers?
Four newspapers here. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She
lived in Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage?
Juneau, Fairbanks. Yeah. And then she traveled all over. I had a list of, you know, she's been to Dawson, to Clear. I mean, this list of names, Sitka, Haines, and...
We've had fun looking at the Alaska Labor Union Hall, which was burned down and then rebuilt, and around 7th and G. And you go there now, and it's a parking garage.
Yeah.
You know, but you think about early Anchorage, where in this time period, in this 1912
1916,
and everything, 1916-ish, the Anchorage was really not even a, it had, it was just, be, you know,
oh yeah,
we're going to have to have a 100th celebration of Anchorage here in a few years, you know, mm-hmm. because that whole part of Alaska was just beginning. And mm-hmm. she was trying to organize these, the railroad workers and the miners, and it's a very fascinating look.
Well,
at,
and at the time too, I mean, this, I don't know how many people were here in 1916 in Anchorage, but 4,000 members of a union. And so I come across something like that. I'm like, wow, really? You know, who were these founding fathers of our town? And now I think of our, I don't think of our town as conservative. I think of our town as very diverse. But that it seemed like it was a very radical place when it first came with the workers. And that's what was so surprising to me researching this.
Well, issues of justice don't really go away. Mm-hmm. You know, injustices mm-hmm. perpetrated don't mm-hmm. go away. Mm-hmm. And I think you can't have been in that struggle for too long for justice mm-hmm. without knowing that.
Right.
Well, something I learned from working on this play, too, that I found fascinating was that right after it was 1912, and in 1913, women in Alaska were given the right to vote.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and you know, there's probably a book in this.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot in this.
The Progressive Heritage of Alaska, which not been written into the history mm-hmm. books very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No disrespect
intended. That's for a historian
intended.
To do, not to
yeah,
know the playwright,
yeah.
though.
No disrespect.
We're looking at the period.
I had to get off track.
Yeah. We were looking at the period right before it with the, you know, sort of the gold rush and then how it sort of transferred into, you know, once that happens, and we were talking about that with Bev, about how Bev Beaton, our historian on the piece, she was telling us about how, you know, it's like the gold rush guys go in, you know, and then the families and women and children follow, and then all of a sudden you start to get towns and townships and cities, and then all of a sudden you need schools and you need and it's just sort of grows, and it's so mm-hmm. fascinating to look at that period of Alaska and see how that began and how that was something that we don't really get, you know, we don't really learn about that much.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm. well, I think if nothing else, you have demonstrated to us the way that art can reach in and touch areas that other forms can't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the question you ask yourself when you do theater is, why is this on stage? Why is this? What is special about this? What can the magic of theater do to bring this person's history alive? And I think Arlisha's captured that in this play. I think the production values are going to really kind of help us bring that alive. And it's a really fascinating thing.
And you mentioned that the question that we're asking, or that Lena might have asked herself when she's there penniless and in her room in New York, was it all worth it? And of course she would say, yes, it was worth it. She would turn around and do it all over in, you know, a heartbeat. And so I think that just comes forward to us. We ask ourselves, were we worth her?
You know? Well, I want to thank you both very much, Boston Christopher, Arlisha Jones. I'm Steve Heimel. Please join us again next month when we bring you another edition of Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, featuring the next Alaskan world premiere play, Time Immemorial, written and performed by noted Alaskan storytellers Jack Dalton and Allison Warden. Man, what a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's really been a pleasure.
It has been.
Sandy, eat your heart out.
Thank you, Steve.
So long now.